Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 134 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I'm extremely excited to bring you my interview with Craig Pasco and Trey Welburn. His name is James Welburn, but he goes by Trey. They're both professors at Georgia College, history professors. Craig is a history professor with an emphasis on U.S. history and Southern foodways. And Trey is an assistant professor of history with an emphasis on American Civil War. This one is great. It's a special. First off, I want to give you a little background. We mentioned it a couple times in the interview. I did an interview with them about a year ago, maybe a little bit longer, and it was fantastic, and it's very similar to the interview that we did that you'll be listening to. But it got corrupted, it got messed up. Something happened in the when I was saving it, and I tried to send it off to friends that knew a lot more about computers than I did, and I could never get it. I could only get chunks of it that were garbled. So luckily, they sat down with me again, and we got this going, and it is so interesting. This is a tour through the traditional barbecue joints of Georgia. Georgia barbecue, I feel, is greatly overlooked. That's why I did an interview with Jim Ockmoody, and now I'm doing this with Craig and Trey, because there's a lot of off the beaten path, back roads, places that are so worth visiting, and just wonderful people that'll embrace you and show their pits and explain the culture and explain the history of their barbecue joints, and their food is spectacular. And we talk about what to get. We go in depth about what Brunswick stew is. This is great because we also go into depth about Barbecue Nation, which they both had a hand in, which is at the Atlanta History Center, and it runs through October of this year, so of 2019, if you're listening to this in 2019. So you still have time to visit. It's so worthwhile and so interesting, and I definitely want to visit. You could Google it. You'll see people, a number of people have visited and taken photos, and it's something that, if you're really into barbecue, it's something that you should put on your bucket list to do. We also talk about the website that the two of them have called Georgia Barbecue Trails, which highlights barbecue throughout the state of Georgia and goes into a lot of the places that we talk about in this interview with additional photos and different things. But I know you're really going to enjoy this, and I apologize if I sound a little stuffed up in this intro. My allergies are going crazy right now. Thanks so much. And as always, I'm excited to have the Smoke Sheet on board as a sponsor for this podcast. The Smoke Sheet is available at bbqnewsletter.com. It's a barbecue newsletter, a weekly barbecue newsletter that shoots in your email box every Wednesday morning without fail. And it is a great resource. It's something that I was subscribing to prior to us talking about doing a sponsorship. But I love what they're doing, and I love what they want to do. And they being Ryan Cooper, who is BBQ Tourist, and Sean Ludwig, who is NYC BBQ. The two of them travel across the country and visit barbecue joints and barbecue festivals and events and factories. Case in point, this week's episode has a visit to Old World Spices and Seasonings, and they go in depth with photos and explaining the world of creating barbecue rubs and seasonings. And there's a lot of fresh content every week, as well as links and information to the latest barbecue news, barbecue joint openings and closures, which is so sad when the barbecue joint closes, as well as information and links to the latest podcast, barbecue podcasts and barbecue YouTube stuff, and any kind of videos that are relevant online. Every time I look at the Smoke Sheet, I see something that I hadn't seen before, which is really cool. And they also have a barbecue recipe of the week, and it's a canned cured, it's not just like filler. It's a really, really good recipe. So it's something that I definitely would sign up for. It's something you'll definitely use. Oh, and they also have links to barbecue events, which I've talked about a lot, but they give you enough time to sign up for these events and travel to these events, because there's awesome barbecue events, and these events every year get better. The events themselves get better. You get a chance to rub shoulders with some of the best people in barbecue, either professionally or just as fans. It's a really great resource. It's available again at bbqnewsletter.com. That's bbqnewsletter.com. The Smoke Sheet is barbecue news worth consuming. And if you're liking these, please subscribe to the YouTube channel as well as the podcast, because that way it shows up in your feed every week. And I do one or two of these per week, if not more, as well as barbecue joint visits and sausage making facility visits and butcher shop visits on the YouTube side. So I don't want you to miss out. And if you're listening to this on the podcast side, Swing over to the YouTube side. You get to see the people that I talk to, and I think that's important because you check them out, and then when you go visit the restaurant, they're familiar. You can see their mannerisms, you can see who they are, and it's almost like you're going to meet an old friend. So I really appreciate too you guys listening and watching these videos. It means a lot. Your feedback means a lot when I get emails or get direct messages from you guys. It definitely brightens my day because I truly, truly want to give you guys the best content and truly want to give you really good information historically as well as present day information and updates as to what's going on in the barbecue world. So I really can't say enough. And if you aren't following me on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, I'm Kevin's BBQ Joints, at Kevin's BBQ Joints. But again, thanks so much for listening and have a great day. Well, good morning, guys.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you for doing this again.
My name is Craig Pasco. I'm a professor of history. I specialize in Southern United States history with a real emphasis on Southern foodways. I've found that was a great way to teach people about the traditions and culture and history of the region. I used to be in the restaurant business. My first career was working in the restaurant business anywhere from New Orleans, Louisiana to Kona, Hawaii.
Wow. I don't know if we covered that.
Yeah, but as a young man in his late 20s, early 30s, I realized that I was getting burned out, and so I thought I'd go into academia. It would be a little bit better work environment, better hours, and hopefully better pay. That really hasn't worked out, but nonetheless, I'm happy with what I've chosen as my second career. I got involved in foodways about 15 years ago. I was working at the Atlanta History Center as the editor of their journal. They published for like 75 years. And I kind of one day said something about barbecue, and everybody goes, "Oh, yeah, we would want to do barbecue for a long time." So in 2005, I submitted a proposal to the Atlanta History Center for Barbecue Nation. And it was readily accepted. They thought it was a great idea. We started the process of looking for financing for it. And then 2008 happened, and the economy took a tank. So did money, soft money for projects like the barbecue exhibit. It laid fallow for about another 6 or 7 years. And there was new leadership. There was more money being infused into the Atlanta History Center. And they said, "Do we still want to do this?" And I said, "Sure." So I worked for a couple of years, kind of getting it established, coming up with content and ideas about the exhibit, funding. I had to go glad handing. That was my first experience begging for money.
That must have been really interesting.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of funny when you're sitting there saying, "May I have $250,000, please?" It's not like asking dad for 10 bucks for gas. So I did that. In the meantime, I started kind of expanding my foodways to Europe. I was looking for a way to get to Europe, so I created a program called Understanding Mediterranean History and Culture Through Food. So I did that. I did some consulting for Andrew Zimmern and his Bizarre Foods. He did a couple of shows about Georgia barbecue and just has kind of gone this extent where we created a Georgia Barbecue Trail website that we'll talk about in a few minutes. So I've become kind of barbecue focused, and people kind of laugh at me. They go, "What are you teaching?" And I'll say, "I'm teaching such and such." And they'll say, "Well, is there anywhere to put barbecue into that?" And I'll say, "Well, if I can find a way, sure." Here I am now, the barbecue history professor.
When you tell people that you're the barbecue history professor, do your colleagues go, "This is barbecue," but it really is.
They love barbecue.
Yeah, everyone loves barbecue, but I think like I'll tell them what I do at barbecue, and they'll say it doesn't make sense in their heads, I guess.
Well, academics are always looking for something fun to do, and the thought of teaching something about barbecue in a class just infatuates them. They're drawn to it. I haven't had a lot of backlash. If there is, it's always behind my back. So
that's just fine. That's fine, right?
I'm going to eat good barbecue, so I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's interesting. I think that we, maybe because of the Wi-Fi connection, we didn't get all that before. So thank you for that. That was great.
Yeah. So I came to Georgia College 4 years ago. I had known of Craig Pasco just as a graduate student at the University of Georgia, but I had never met him. So when I got down here, he actually chaired the search committee that ended up hiring me, and so we got to know each other pretty early on. And he was always talking about his research trips, which consisted of driving around the state and the region, and in some cases the nation, eating barbecue.
Terrible. It's just terrible.
He finally got tired of me asking, well, where are you going and can I come? And and so it was a way for me to sort of scratch an intellectual itch that I've had really dating to my undergraduate days. I was always interested in the role of food in defining culture and identity and that kind of thing. That's sort of what I do. Is
so intriguing. Yes.
So it was just a great way to get into that foodways world as a professional and also sort of scratch a personal itch. So my name, by the way, is Trey Wellborn. But I'm primarily a American cultural historian. 19th century, the Civil War is the focal point of most of my research and writing. But in that, I'm doing a lot of identity and cultural ideology, and so Foodways was a way to kind of bring those two worlds together.
Did you guys get a chance to still do road trips together?
We've done a couple of road trips. I'm kind of locked into more Georgia focus now because of Georgia barbecue trails. I just did a trip a few months ago where I hit, I think, 18 barbecue places in 36 hours in Savannah and South. It's like drive-by barbecue. You run in, you order a barbecue sandwich, you check things out, you talk to people, you give them the sticker and a certificate, and then you head out to the next location. Sometimes I would have as many as 3 or 4 half-eaten barbecue sandwiches in the car because there's only so much food you can eat in one day. So I've done that. A few years ago for the Atlanta History Center, I did a nationwide tour just to kind of hit the high spots, looking for potential sites to travel the barbecue exhibit. The only other time I get a chance to get out of the state is when I do barbecue competitions. I'm a Memphis Barbecue Network and KCBS certified judge. I'll be close to 10 judgings at the Jack Daniel's International up in Lynchburg, and I consider that to be like the premier barbecue event because it's international. They have teams from all over the world.
It's massive.
And it's kind of funny because one year they had a team from Turkey and they were all Muslims. And I'm saying, well, why? And they said, well, because the guy's daddy was really rich and he flew the whole thing in, the cookers and everything. And this is kind of a hobby for him. And, you know, he qualified, so we're happy.
But they couldn't cook pork, right?
Well, they cooked pork. They just didn't eat it.
Okay. I guess
they had tasters. I mean, they were so rich, they probably had tasters.
That's true. Yeah. No, but there's also, too, I've talked to a number of companies that make smokers, and a lot of them ship back over to the United Emirates, like a lot of to Saudi Arabia. So there are restaurants there that cater towards the foreigners.
Yeah. We've actually, on the Georgia Barbecue website, we're able to track where our viewership is from, and we've actually had 3 people from the United Arab Emirates check out our website.
It's global. It's in our DNA. It's something that makes a lot of sense. So should we go to the Georgia Barbecue Trail first, and then go to what's the next step in learning more about what you guys do?
I think the Georgia Barbecue Trail is a good way to start, but I think to preface that, I've been teaching a Southern Foodways and Traditions course for the past 5 years, and barbecue, of course, is a very important aspect of that class. We spend some time going to some barbecue places. They talk to pit masters and get as much of a authentic, and when I say authentic, kind of old-timey Georgia experience. It's kind of hard to qualify what authentic is nowadays, but there are some things you can point out when you walk into a barbecue place going, well, this is not really authentic to have 6 different types of sauce. Usually the real authentic places have 1 type of sauce. If you don't like it, then you go somewhere else.
Exactly.
Because that's their tradition. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and then the Georgia Barbecue Trails thing was something that came out of the Barbecue Nation. It was one of the concepts that I had submitted for consideration that they weren't able to take up because of the time and effort and money involved in doing it. So like a crazy person, I invested some of my own money, a very small amount. I got a GoDaddy account, and we started collecting different sites around the state. No one had really done that for about 20 or 30 years. There was someone that cataloged 300 places a few decades ago, but half of them were already closed and it was kind of outdated. So what we decided to do was to do that, start off with kind of listing barbecue places, not by the reviews. We don't judge anybody's barbecue because we have no right to do that because people cook their barbecue the way they like it.
I agree.
There are some places that serve bad barbecue, but then you just don't go back to there.
Yeah. And that's the way I felt. In my core, I feel the same way as you said.
Yeah, so we actually have a site that we've got almost 200 places now where they can see a picture of the place. They can hit on their Facebook page or their website, and they can see where it is. And so if they want to travel, they can look at the map. We have
a great resource. And it's did you guys redo it recently or the last year?
It's a continual work in progress. Yeah. We're kind of improving the functionality of the map. And
it's working really well.
Continuing to add to the data set
and the
places across the state.
And the thing about the website is that it's an educational website. And we mean to include more and more things. Like this fall, I'm teaching the Southern Food Waste course. And one of the things that they're required to do is they'll partner up and they'll go on site and interview a pit master or a barbecue owner. And we're going to take those videos and include them to the website.
I love that.
And the recipes. We have a section called fixins or sides. And then we'll talk about anything from potato salad, coleslaw to baked beans, and Brunswick stew, mull, things like that. And try to find some old recipes. I won't call them authentic, but some older recipes. Like we have one from Wilkes County, Washington, Georgia. It's a barbecue sauce that supposedly was handed down from this guy named Sheriff Callaway back in the 1890s. It was considered nationwide to be the greatest Georgia pitmaster in existence. And he had this recipe that is handed down. And so we're going to try to get the recipe for that. And we want to do some things that will kind of preserve. We know we can't maintain the old-fashioned ways, but at least we can preserve them to some point. And that's also why we're part of the True Q initiative that's
John Shelton Reed, right?
Now
with what you're doing right now, is that something that people can get involved with too that are outside? And when you say Southern Foodways, is it the Southern Foodways Alliance or is it just mean Southern Foodways
in general, just courses? I've talked to the SFA and they're more than happy to share anything that they have as far as video clips on Georgia barbecue because they know they're the real focus of what people look for when they're looking for foodways information about the South. Mm-hmm. So they don't feel like they're territorial. They're not territorial. They want to share. They want to expand the knowledge and the interest in foodways as much as possible.
And they did a Southern barbecue tour series a while back now.
Yeah, I think I remember that. Yeah,
on their website, and several of the places that they visited were in the state, and. Some of our early posts on the website were drawn from their site.
And how exciting, though! That's like that's that research that, especially when it comes to barbecue, but that research angle is probably something that fuels your passion too. Because I can tell it's in my blood, and that's something that's in seems like it's in your blood. So, Barbecue Nation, how much longer do we have for that? That's till September.
It runs until October.
Oh, October. Okay.
Yeah, and. It's a great exhibit. Of course, they couldn't do everything that we possibly wanted, but I think they put together in the final product something that was very informational and will provide people with a better understanding of what barbecue is and how it's not just a food, but it's a tradition, it's part of the culture, and it's a part of everybody's kind of psyche as far as meeting and at the table and sitting down and enjoying a good meal. Mm. Barbecue was the easiest way to feed people.
I agree completely. And it's also something that even like if someone messes it up a little bit, it still tastes good. It's not great, but it's something
that's why they added sauce.
Exactly.
That's true. That's the exact reason why. Now, is that you said that might tour? Is that go to different locations or?
They had talked about it touring. It's very expensive. When you build an exhibit, you'll build it to where it'll have the ability to be packed up and moved to the next location. That's what they did. But because museums across the country now are moving more and more towards permanent exhibits, because they can't afford to buy the or rent these exhibits because of the high cost, then it's less likely that they'll be able to travel it very much. And I think their hopes are at the Atlanta History Center that perhaps maybe someone somewhere will see that as a way to begin a process of creating a permanent exhibit where they can take everything that's been done up to that point and kind of work on that.
So that's something that's a possibility.
It's always a possibility, you know, because what do you do with the exhibit when it's over? Basically, you take the artifacts and you basically put them in the basement and just try to figure out what you're going to do with it. So it'd be great for them to be able to hand it off to someone else and maybe take in a little extra cash to help pay for the project.
So maybe that's a Kickstarter campaign in fall or winter. But it's something that people, if they're listening to this prior to October 2019, they should, if they're in the area or heading out there, it would be something. And how long would it take you to go through it? A couple hours? Or like to really understand it?
There are different types of visitors in a museum. There are people that take their time and actually read everything and reflect on things. And then they call them streakers. They just basically whip through there in 10 minutes and they're done.
Take two photos and act like they were there, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like when I go to Italy and in Greece with my summer program students. Most people just walk by pictures and walk by a painting and take a picture and just keep moving. They never stop to look at it.
Get the Instagram post and move
on. Yeah, exactly. They don't want to see the brush stroke.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, that's cool. Thank you for giving more information about that. And I've been trying to promote it, and people that I know that are going to Atlanta, I always tell them to go there because I think it's something, and I need to go before September at least. Maybe I can meet you guys there.
That would be great.
I would love to. You guys have gone with, didn't Daniel Vaughn go, or was that with somebody else, or?
Jim? I think Jim met with Daniel Vaughn and talked about it. I talked to Texas Monthly. Well, they did a special thing on barbecue a couple years ago, and I talked to them about they were talking about the barbecue outside of the United States, and we were talking about France. And so I think Texas Monthly is finding it very difficult to remain in Texas.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because so much out there.
They're expanding their scope for sure.
I think so too, and I think as much as they want to, and it's also interesting when they first hired Daniel to see where they've gone, like how it's shifted and changed since they hired Daniel.
Yeah, and you know Daniel's got that book on cooking whole hog.
I know
that's not a Texas tradition.
Uh-uh.
So he's expanding out, and he has to because barbecue, like you know, is the regionalism is dying out because that regionalism, you see it in all different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Texas 20, 30, 40 years ago, you couldn't find pork as much as you can now on the menu.
And conversely, you couldn't get beef brisket at most places.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, all across the rest of the United States. And that it's very common for a restaurant to have multiple meats, even if it's not necessarily their like the core. I interviewed someone yesterday who they do whole hog like once a month, which is in Texas, which is so strange.
Yeah, and you couldn't even find sausage outside of Texas.
That's true.
Part of the menu.
You still can't really find great sausage here in California. And when I was in Texas, you go to an HEB or you go to a supermarket, and they'd have such a collection of sausages.
Yeah.
And it made me so angry. I thought, oh, what am I?
probably extend your life a few more years.
That's true. I know. Well, I do my best to eat as much meat as possible living in California. I don't. I'm not kale. I'm not into kale and just salads here. So let's talk about barbecue spots that people should visit because in our first interview that ended up getting corrupted, I wanted to we talked about a lot of places that were off the beaten path that people might not know about but they should. So I would love to let's start anywhere you guys want to start.
Yeah, I'll talk about, it's both my personal favorite just in terms of the barbecue and the Brunswick stew that they offer and the story attached to it, the historical context of it. It's in Washington, Georgia, in Wilkes County, Georgia. It's called the Washington Food Market.
Okay.
And to me, that we talked about Sheriff Callaway, it's part of that Sheriff Callaway 1890s, early 1900s tradition. What at that time sort of emerged as the Georgia barbecue style. I mean, their sauce and that style of barbecue was sort of quintessentially Georgian, at least in the national conception.
Yeah, and Callaway was getting requests to do his barbecue all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Really?
And so for many people, Southern barbecue was attached to the state of Georgia and Callaway. And now we have this conception of Georgia as somewhat of a barbecue mutt, right? Like, we don't have a style in Georgia. It pulls from Alabama. It pulls from the Carolinas. And really, I think Washington Food Market and keeping that Callaway tradition sort of in place cuts against that grain, that common misconception of Georgia barbecue.
And what's served there?
So it's a vinegar-based sauce, a little spicy, but it's pork. It's not whole hog. I think they're mostly doing butts. But the stew too is very meaty, and it's a little spicy, a black pepper spice. It's not like a Cajun spice where it's more red peppery. It's a black pepper spice, and it's really pretty unique in terms of the sauce and the meat combination.
Now, do they serve plates and sandwiches, or just sandwiches, or
they? It's pretty typical that you'll have a sandwich plate. You can get a whole plate, which is, I think, a half pound of barbecue and sides but the best thing about this place is it's an old food market, so it's an old grocery store that you go through, and most of the shelves they may have you know, a can of Old Bay on the nothing else on the shelf. So you walk through the grocery to the back counter, and that's where the barbecue operation is. It's only open on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, as any good place in the South is.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And so you go in and you have your order, and they have tables outside that you can sit at and eat, or you can take it to go. And
is it actual a grocery store? Like you said, there's a can of Old Bay. Do people actually go there to shop?
No.
No one has bought groceries from this place in years.
The shelves are about 90% empty. Yeah. It's there for show. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But the owner, Greg, I talked to him the last time I was there, and he's been doing this for like 30, 40 years. And I said, well, are you going to retire? And he said, well, I'm sort of retired now. We do the Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then if I have time, I'll drive down to Florida to my summer home. And I'll come back to work, because obviously he's making some money off of it.
Wow.
He's a perfect example of what's going to happen to barbecue traditions, that someday he's just going to close down and you'll never get the chance to eat his food again.
Oh, yeah. That's a shame.
Yeah, but we see that over and over. I remember a few months ago, North Carolina had a couple of their kind of standard restaurants shut down that everybody saw as one of the icons of barbecue history in that state.
I guess the only way it would be passed on is if there's a child that wants to, or an employee. There's a place out here that was a dishwasher, and he bought it from the men that owned the restaurant.
Well, I've got a great story about that. Outside of Wimbana, Georgia, which is on the eastern edge of Georgia, about the central region, there's a barbecue place called Vanna Barbecue. And I talked to the owner, a woman named Jenna, and I said, well, how did you end up owning this place? And it was kind of strange. I walked in. It was all female staff. And I thought that was kind of a nice little trick.
Yeah.
And kind of a come on to the local guys. But she said, well, I worked here at the age of 14. Here in Georgia, we kind of ignore some of the laws of childhood. But she worked there at 14 for a few years, then I guess went off to college and came back and ended up buying the place. And basically, she's continuing on the tradition of the owner that had it before her and the one that had it before that person. So sometimes you'll see that. Where someone comes in and loves the business and loves good barbecue enough to kind of carry on with that tradition. But sometimes those things just shut down and you never really have that access anymore.
That's so sad. It is so sad. Especially for like the other generations. Like, we've gotten a chance to go to a lot of these places, and they'll just be a myth almost.
And that's been one of the really fun things as we've chronicled more and more places across the state. We found a lot of female pit masters and owners of these places that, in the common conception of barbecue culture, it's a patriarchal conception of, it's a male-driven stereotype.
For sure.
But that's been a lot of fun talking to these pit masters and how they got involved in the business, how they took over the business, how they sort of run the business.
Were some of them like someone passed away and that's and then it turned it became their place, or was it a lot of times out of desire?
A lot of times it was just handed down, or basically someone that worked there kind of assumed ownership. There's a place called Twin Oaks in Brunswick, Georgia, and you need to Google the image of it. It's a classic.
Twin Oaks, okay.
Yeah. Twin Oaks, it's been there for probably 60, 70 years. I went in there and I was talking to the manager, a woman probably in her late 50s, early 60s. And I said, well, how long have you been working here? She goes, I was a waitress here for 41 years. I just became the manager. It's like, well, that's some dedication. Then the owner came in. It was a woman whose basically father had had the place before that. And they just carried on that tradition. And I said, well, why did you want to stay here? She goes, this is my life. This is who I was. We had regular customers. We have customers that come back after two or three generations. And that seemed to comfort people.
And I think that families coming to a barbecue restaurant, they interact more with the staff than they would, say, an Italian restaurant or maybe even possibly a sandwich shop. But there's some kind of weird, like we've talked about, the connection that's maybe what keeps the employees there too, because they have these relationships with the customers.
Right.
What kind of food do they have there?
Just your basic line. Of course, they have Brunswick stew, being in Brunswick, which was pretty good. Again, everybody has their favorite Brunswick stew concoction. I've in the state of Georgia, I've run into some really bizarre types of Brunswick stew, especially in the Columbus, Georgia region. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a paste, which I found very. I know it's really kind of strange. But that's what they love. And people said, oh, you got to try the Brunswick stew. And I got it. And it's like, you could take the cup and turn it upside down and it wouldn't come out.
do you have to add liquid to it or something?
I don't know. Maybe I didn't see the instructions, so I didn't know what was doing.
Can you guys explain for people that might not know what Brunswick stew is, just a quick little explanation as to what it is?
Okay, Brunswick stew. Brunswick stew is basically nothing more than a type of pot cooking that goes back to the days of hunting, or even back into the early period in mankind, where if you had a pot, basically you threw things in it, leftovers. I had a little water, and you would eat off of that. And so Brunswick stew became part of the barbecue experience in the South, basically because it was kind of a poor man's way of utilizing everything that was there. Hunters would use it, a little bit of squirrel, a little bit of rabbit, maybe some pigeons or whatever meat going in. And you got any corn? Get throw some corn in. I don't know where lima beans came from, but lima beans ended up in there too, and then the tomato. But originally, you didn't really have those vegetables in Brunswick stew because they didn't have readily access to good fresh produce. And so it's kind of morphed over time, and that's the real key to understanding barbecue in general, but Southern barbecue in particular, is that barbecue has changed, but it's adapted. It's basically taken on any newcomers and modified the ingredients and the recipe to remain something specifically Southern.
Gotcha. So and it's something that they can utilize whatever they have around.
Right. And if you think about it, since you've been looking at barbecue for a number of years now, there was a time that you never saw hoisin sauce in a barbecue marinade.
Mm-mm. No.
Or a sauce, and then all of a sudden hoisin becomes a part of it for people looking to have a sweeter type of sauce.
That is true. People bring in things from their travels or from a specific culture, a specific type of people move to a certain area, and then it becomes, it kind of blends. But so Brunswick stew, there's not one typical type of Brunswick stew. It's just...
It varies widely, yeah.
And you have people that really will get into a pissing match about the fact that there's a lima bean in my Brunswick stew, and it doesn't belong there.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you guys? Do you like beans in your chili?
If I can get a really good chili with brisket, shredded brisket, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, if it's ground hamburger meat, I'm looking for beans as a filler. Gotcha. So I do a big pot of chili, and I throw the beans in just because I want volume.
It's in my chili. I know that's blasphemy in some quarters.
I think in Texas it's a blasphemy, right? Like, I almost don't want to give my opinion that right now just because I don't want to get there. I mean, I like all types of chili. I'll say that. It'll make it easier. All right, let's keep moving on to other places. Already, those three locations that you've talked about, or four, that are just spectacular. And these places are all still open, and chances are they'll open Thursday through Saturday?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Vanna's is kind of the only game in town from about a 20-mile radius. So they open up sometimes on Sundays. You'll get some restaurants, some barbecue places that become so much of a staple of the community that they have enough business on Sunday, not just for barbecue, but they'll add on other things like pork chops or fried chicken or mac. If they don't serve mac and cheese, they might offer it on Sunday just because there's a market there and there's a quality aspect to what they're doing.
And people are coming after church probably, or they're coming.
Yeah, that's a lot of the crowd. Is
yeah, and more and more of these places are working on that program where when we run out, we run out. I saw that even in Savannah. There's a place called Randy's, another great restaurant. To Google the image, it's awesome.
Okay,
fantastic. Cool. Building.
I actually met the owner in the street. I had to go to the street to talk to him because he was kind of talking to this woman in a car, and so I had to go and get him out of the street and talk to him.
Oh, hilarious.
1:30 in the afternoon on a Thursday, and his restaurant was already closed down, and he was serving hot dogs. He was selling hot dogs out front. I said, "What's the deal?" And he goes, "You know, we open up at, I think, 10 o'clock in the morning, and we got a line down the street at 10 o'clock waiting to buy our ribs, and by 12 or 1, we're sold out. Because that's all we can do. His cookers were right there. He's a true Q. He doesn't use anything but wood or charcoal. And he said, our reputation is you got to get here early to get my ribs. And a lot of these places are doing that just to guarantee the quality of what they're serving.
Yeah, so they're not carrying over till the next day. I think that's really important.
They're not going broke because what do you do with a rib if it's a day old? It's true. Not that good.
Yeah.
No. Now, we did find one modern place, something Q. In the Atlanta area.
In Metro Atlanta.
They take their leftover ribs, they marinate them in a kind of a hoisin-style sauce, and then bread them and deep fry them.
Huh.
And they're amazing.
Yeah. That sounds really interesting.
Bastardization of what barbecue was supposed to be.
They called them sticky ribs.
Yeah, sticky ribs, yeah.
Did they dip it in a sauce after or something, or they have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really thick...
kind of almost like Asian sauce.
The molasses are like almost honeyish, yeah.
Definite Asian flavor to it.
When you mention ribs, do most of these places not serve ribs? The places that we're referring to in our discussion.
A lot of them do. You know, the ribs seem to be a real staple for a lot of people. There's a place outside of Columbus, Georgia that I ran across called A&R Barbecue. And the guy's been doing it for like 25 years. He's built two pits. The big tall pits that are made out of brick and has a nice smoke chimney. I mean, a really quality construction. And the majority of what he cooks are ribs. And he's been doing it for 25 years. And you know, his ribs were excellent. Didn't have any sauce on it, but it had just a really light salt and pepper flavor to it. And you know, some people say this is crazy, but it's the love that people put into their food that you can really appreciate if you know that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the time that they've spent caring about what they're doing, and they've kind of honed these skills that they now have. Wow. So A&R Barton, a lot of these places, when you're referring to them, how far away from Atlanta, if someone came into Atlanta, how far away are they from this?
2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours.
Yeah, most of them probably 2 to 3 hours. Brunswick's a little further.
Yeah, Brunswick's about a five-hour trip.
It's southeast.
Well, we started the concept of the barbecue trails was to start with all the restaurants and never get any attention.
Yes.
Especially the little ones. Like A&R is on this little side road that if you didn't know was there, you would never stop at. There was no signage anywhere saying this way to A&R. He just had a little sign out front with the hours, and that was it. And it was basically part of his house, I think. So those are the kind of places that you can find really good barbecue and real good examples of a tradition that is basically being overwhelmed by the Atlanta market. Everybody's coming to the Atlanta. There's great barbecue restaurants in the Atlanta area, but more and more the really good traditional or old-fashioned type of barbecue places are starting to fall by the wayside because competition is too tough.
Oh yeah, and those places can't move their business to the big city, so to speak. It's not doesn't translate. It doesn't make sense. And a lot of these places too, are they pretty economical price wise?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They have to be, right?
When you get a rack of ribs from someplace like A&R and you pay probably $8 to $10 less than you would pay for in a restaurant in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You leave full.
So let's keep the tour going. This is great. This is fantastic. Thank you.
Another one, we'll go to the city, Macon, Georgia, with Finchers.
Yeah,
Finchers. Finchers is a real good example.
And I've heard of that, but I don't know a whole lot about them.
It's been around for about 75 years. The original location is still there. They have a couple of branches in the Macon area. But Jake Fincher is the son. It's been handed down from generation to generation. They serve Myron Mixon. You remember Myron?
Of course.
Myron Mixon was interviewed by Savour magazine a few years ago, and they said, where would you go eat barbecue if you weren't cooking it yourself? And he said, I'd go to Fincher's because that's what I grew up on.
Interesting.
The odd thing about it is the barbecue sauce they use is a little mustard based. It's a combination of mustard and vinegar based.
Okay.
And so it's kind of hard to pin down a sauce that's peculiar or part of the Georgia lore because it's been so many different types. Columbus, Georgia, they use a mustard based sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, why? Because South Carolina's so far away.
Yeah.
And they figure that's where the epicenter of a barbecue sauce that uses mustard.
Yeah.
Places like Heights, the original Heights closed down just this last year.
I know, that's sad.
I know, it's sad. Heights actually used nothing but straight yellow mustard.
Yeah, very
on mustard. Their meat. Very, very mustardy. No vinegar, no nothing. They just throw it. And actually, I was a little worried about it when I tried it, but it was actually good.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't eat it again, I don't think.
Well, a lot of people here, at least in California too, use French's mustard as a way just to make sure that the rub adheres to the meat. And you don't necessarily taste it. Maybe you get like a vinegar back end or something.
Well, I asked the people in Columbus, some of the barbecue people, and I said, where did the mustard base thing come from? And they said that during World War II, when the fort there, the training facility, Fort Benning, was geared up and you had 60, 70,000 recruits there, it drew people, entrepreneurs, to the area because they saw that there'd be a demand for things like food and housing, things like that. So they said a lot of people from South Carolina migrated down to the Columbus area, and they brought with them their mustard traditions.
There you go.
And that's why you've got this little section of Georgia that's mustard-based.
That's so unique. What's the oldest barbecue spot in Georgia that's still open?
Well, I don't know
that we've dated.
You said like seven. You said 75 years.
Jake's is in there in the top 10, I'm sure.
Okay.
It's 1927. I've seen places in the into the mid 20s, and I can't recall which ones. But Jake's has been there, I know, for at least 75 years, maybe more.
And so many of these places, especially if they're that old, started as what we would now sort of recognize as catering operations. They would cater to political rallies in the county or the local city or town, wherever they're at. And then they would get such great feedback from people that say, well, maybe we should do this full time. And they'd open up a little roadside stand or find a little piece of property. And a lot of the origin stories of these places are like that.
And it's interesting, I'm starting to find that with a lot of just even places that are opening now, that opened in the last 3, 4, 5 years, everyone seems to have started with a little bit of catering, and then they're selling to family, and then catering, and then boom. It gets
well, Mike Mills, you know, the iconic pitmaster, he started off basically cooking. I think he was a mail carrier into his 50s before he got involved in barbecue, because people said, you cook really good barbecue.
He had a team before.
Before then he opened up his restaurants.
So I've talked to Amy, but I've never talked specifically to Mike. I did a long time
ago. He's awesome.
I did a phone interview back before like the internet was even something, and I transcribed it, but I can't find it where I wrote it down.
Yeah, and if you ever run into him, he'll take time. He'll talk to you. He's
so
just
generous.
A really good soul. You need to come to Lynchburg because he's usually there every year.
Excellent. Yeah. But I feel like when I go there, it'll be so overwhelming. Like I'll be so excited, and it'll just be the stimulus. And that's what I hope that people glean from this is that it inspires them to travel and see these spots.
Yeah, and there's places that, you know, I tell people to step out of your comfort zone and go to those parts of town, like in Valdosta, that you wouldn't normally drive through, and stop at this place and try their barbecue because it's exceptional. Or countryside, you drive by a place, it looks like a ramble shack with a sign that says CJ's Barbecue. There's one in particular I'm thinking of. And it's a place where you kind of flip a coin on whether you want to go in there or not.
It's worth the
go
stop.
Go in there. It's worth the stop.
That's great advice.
Said one time I pulled up to a place like that, and I said, I'm going in. She goes, in there? I said, yeah, there's potentially good barbecue in there. Mm-hmm. And then if it's even not good barbecue, it's just the experience. Yeah. And it's almost like you're on a treasure hunt.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. That's exactly what it is. And also, too, they will open, like, they'll welcome you with open arms because they'll be excited and they'll chat with you. And that's what life's about, is talking to people, I think.
Meeting the people that have run these businesses and do the work that goes in, all the time and effort that goes into producing all this food, it's delicious. It's fantastic.
When I go into some of these kind of backwoods African-American places, you know, I walk in, here's a white guy, he's got a dress shirt on, he's got something in his hand, you know, a piece of paper, which may not be good news. I always start off by saying, I'd like to talk to you about barbecue first. I'm not here to ask for any money.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, okay. And then they warm up and they're bringing you samples and they're telling you stories and they're giving you suggestions like, you know, you go down here about 20 miles, a good cousin of mine, and he does good barbecue.
Oh.
It's a network.
Yeah.
And it's the other thing I found, that both African-American and white as well, there's a network of barbecue in the countryside, because one person will start a barbecue place in one town. Maybe somebody will work at it for 20 years, then move 20 miles away and open their own barbecue place, or get divorced from someone who goes opens another place. And it's just amazing. You sit there and they say, oh, yeah, John down there in the Half Acre, they did this. And then it's just amazing what's out there.
Yeah.
And that's the history of barbecue. That's exactly, and that's what makes it fun, because it's interesting to see how the styles change from different places and the stories. Yeah, that's for me, that's everything.
And one of the things that's most interesting about going to these places, which I think is why our site is so, because we're trying to visit all these places and actually interact with the people, is they'll take you back and they'll show you their operation, and they're very proud. A lot. Some of it is very innovative and ingenious, really. Some of the contraptions that people have devised to scale and to increase their scale, what they're doing, but not lose the quality.
And they're proud of their pits.
It's fascinating.
And that's what's great, too, is that people that listen to this that really dig pits, they can, when they visit these places, they can see such unique styles and different, and everyone's doing their own take on something.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all proud, like you said, they're all proud of their pits, always proud.
Sure.
And they should be.
And they run the gamut, too. You'll see various designs of brick pits, and then you'll see the place in the town that I live in, Madison, Georgia, is called Crow's Barbecue. And he is kind of started out in life as a welder. So he basically welded his own. It was a mobile pit, but it is massive. I mean, it looks like a boat trailer, basically. And so it's got the firebox, and he can cook pounds and pounds of meat on this thing.
And so is that kind of, so it's an offset, so to speak, but
yeah, it's totally his creation. He's tweaked it over the years. He's had various iterations of it, and this didn't work right with the first one that I made, so I scrapped it and I did. And just walking through that story with him is that's part of the fun, is just seeing how people sort of on the fly figure out what they're doing and sort of put the time and the effort in to improve the product that they're producing.
That's the thing about the Finchers in Macon. They have a pit that's been in use for 75 years. If they stop using it, then the health department's not going to let them use it again because it's way out of code.
I'm sure.
It's enclosed in a room, and it's about waist high. And then it's got the big heavy metal doors that they can raise and lower. And they've been cooking on that for 75 years. And I'm one of those people that believe that sometimes the vessel that you cook something in has as much to do with what the meat tastes like as the meat itself.
Oh, yeah. And how do they clean that?
Very rarely.
And I actually, one of the places that I visited was called Holcomb's, which is in White Plains, Georgia. Trying to think what the nearest town.
Near Greensboro,
Georgia. And they actually have another restaurant in Greensboro, too. They serve both places. But his operation, he switched to gas just to increase his scale to meet demand in the local community. But he said, and he was blatant about this, he said, we kept the pits as they were, and we keep most of the drippings because that's really what people think. That's the flavor that people are looking for, at least in our barbecue. So he said we really haven't had much backlash once we switched from gas to wood because of that, because of the pits, and they have this massive system. He had a pulley system that you could open all the giant lids at once. And,
oh, wow.
That he had devised, and it was a fantastic pit. But it had been, I guess, sort of refitted for gas, which
I know. Can you taste the difference?
I could. I mean, no, not unless you really, really know what you're. I mean, you can if you know what you're missing. Like if you're looking for a particular type of wood, smoke, flavor. But I would say the average barbecue enthusiast probably has no idea.
Yeah, and you know that's the thing about these people that acquire these barbecue restaurants or it's handed down through the family. They are very, very committed to maintaining the same recipes.
I'm going to ask you, when you talked about wood, what type of wood are they using in Georgia mostly?
A lot of pecan.
A lot of oak too.
A lot of oak.
But indigenous oak, not necessarily white oak. So there's a different type of oak in Georgia, right?
They use a fair amount of white oak too. But
oh, yeah? It's in the south.
They'll use pecan. You'll have more pecan wood further south because you've got the pecan mm-hmm. orchards down there. Peach, they've got peach orchards as well.
Do any of these places serve dessert?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you can get some of the best desserts in the world.
Yeah.
They're into layer cakes. They're into banana pudding. I mean, banana pudding is kind of a must-have if you're going to have a dessert list in a mm-hmm. in a barbecue place, and because it's easy to make.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a good recipe, people will run to that. But if you can find a place that serves cake, mm-hmm. It's usually really good.
So that's also that's a good tip for
peach
people.
Peach cobbler is usually a staple in Georgia.
So save. I always tell people to try to save room for the dessert because generally, if you serve it, it's a good dessert.
Yeah,
yeah. Take it to go. It's a great snack for later.
Yeah.
Even if you have no room there, it's worth. It's worth the.
So it's not there's no keto diet in this whole thing. So have we missed any spots that you guys want to talk about?
There, I've found in looking for the out of the way places that there are a lot more African Americans and women, even African American women, that are in the business now. Because it's a concept that's pretty easy to start up. If you start off with just maybe a couple of different meats, some ribs, some pork, pulled pork, and things like that, throw together a couple of sides, mac and cheese, a banana pudding, then you can make a little bit of money off of that. And a lot of times these grow. In Macon, there's a place called BL Smokers. It's just this little hole in the wall.
Huh.
And you can go in and you can get to what the Macon newspaper. I gave them a reference to that, and they went to eat, and they reported it was the best brisket they had ever had.
Wow.
So you just never know where you're going to find that. There's a place in Danielsville, north of Athens, mm-hmm. that is primarily things like hamburgers and hot dogs and French fries, but they do a pulled pork sandwich that's out of this world.
Really?
And it's just amazing. And it's, it's like probably 8 to 10 ounces of meat on a bun. And the meat is just cooked to perfection. And so I had to put them on the list because they have a product that's a barbecue product that
it's
people
important.
Need to try.
Is that
no, it's that's I can't remember. It's the real colored one, the painted one right in the circle.
Okay.
So things like that.
Someone came to Atlanta or they were coming to Georgia to travel. How would you say try to hit three places a day?
We've got 75 that runs north south. We've got 85 that runs kind of diagonally from the southwest to the northeast. We've got I-20. We've got I-16 that cut across the state. If they go from Atlanta to Savannah, then usually about 10 to 15 miles off of the interstate, they're going to find a lot of restaurants, okay. barbecue places, and they can just do that. Or if they're in Savannah going down to Brunswick, there's probably 8 or 10 places that they could stop off and try something. Savannah has got a number of old traditional barbecue places in the kind of the lower class neighborhoods that still maintain. I went to one a place called Tricks, and they literally thought I was a cop. And they kind of questioned who I was. And when they finally vetted me, they called the owner. And the owner came driving up in his Cadillac and sat in the car while I talked to him. It felt like, this is really urban.
That's great.
Really terrible. But once everybody knew that I was there for barbecue, I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
because they're proud of their barbecue. Mm-hmm. And he talked about the traditions and why he was doing it and the love of doing it. And you got to try their food, you know, just because they're so dedicated to it. Now, you may not like it, but that's what they love.
Yeah, and that's why I love to try a bunch of different places. And there's places that, like, even in Los Angeles, that are old school places, been there for 30, 40 years. And people, they're like, oh, it's too saucy. But I still want to try it because they have lines out the door. So someone likes their food.
Yeah, it's like in the old days, in the, you know, the 50s and 60s, before the interstate highways really became kind of fully built. Basically, what they told you to do when you were looking for a place to eat, and you didn't have fast food restaurants, look for the roadside cafe with the most trucks. Mm-hmm. That's where you eat.
Yeah,
and it's kind of the same thing with barbecue. If you drive by like Randy's and you see 10 or 15 cars in line before it opens, you got to know that there's something good there.
That's a good sign.
If the local police force and firemen
yes.
are in the parking lot at lunchtime, you know that's the spot to be.
Yeah, there's a couple. I drove by a place yesterday, and there was like two fire engines, and you know it's good.
So you know you have come to the right place.
What's the best way to do the research for people that want to do research before they hit Georgia?
Go to our website and look at the map itself. Has got little pigs showing a barbecue place, and it gives you a good idea. It's overlaid with the interstate system, so you can pick it that way. And from those, you just click on each of those icons, and you can go to the website and get information for hours and things like that. And I recommend people checking on the hours before
for
they
sure.
go.
I was going to say that too, yeah.
Yeah, there's a real problem with that, with not knowing when things are going to be open. But doing that, maybe scrolling down and looking at the places that we've got an image of to get an idea of what it looks like.
What you're looking for.
Yeah, what yeah. you're actually looking for. And just kind of route it out that way. That's what I did when I went to my trip to Savannah and then down to Brunswick and then cut across the lower part of Georgia on the way back up. I just plotted it. And I probably missed about 10 more that I could have stopped at, but I just ran out of time and money. So it's easy to do, and most people are not going to hit that many restaurants. So if you hit three or four between Atlanta and Savannah, you've got a real flavor of what's out there.
Yeah,
you've done a great job. And do you like people to reach out after they've visited to let you know what you think?
We say on the website that if you have recommendations for a barbecue place, let us know, and we'll add it on. We've had one person just emailed the other day and said, you know, this is a great site. Are you going to do anything like there's a barbecue app that the state of Alabama did that's awesome, and other states should kind of use that as a model. We will probably do something like that when I get $25,000 or $30,000. I can't afford that. Okay. That's why we've got GoDaddy. Just a little time on Google. Mm-hmm. I would avoid looking at the reviews.
Yeah.
Because the reviews really don't tell you a whole lot.
I agree.
Really is there.
But really, that was part of sort of the motivation to do the site, was to provide at least a starting place for people to get the basic information they need. And then from there, it's sort of up to your own personal taste, what you're looking for, where you're going, that kind of thing. But we have enough places on the site now.
We've got almost 200.
Yeah, it's a wealth of information.
Even extended it. I'm thinking long term, we'll probably kind of maintain about 400 to 500. And since we're able to utilize interns here at the Georgia College, we'll have them basically always updating things.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Savannah, I think it was open. It's no longer open, but it still caters. Yeah. So I had to make an adjustment to that. And that's nothing worse than going to a website saying, oh, let's go to this place, and you go and it's closed.
Yeah. There you go. So that's also a good resource.
We've identified far more places than we've been able to vet and sort of get in contact with and actually make sure that they're on the site for the right reason.
Are there people that too go on vacation at these spots? Cause they're...
Yeah, I was in the place I was talking about, CJ's, that looked kind of shady going into. And as I was leaving, a family from Florida pulled up. And I asked them, I said, how did you, because it was like 15 miles off the interstate. And I said, how did you find this place? They said, we Googled it, and we just Googled barbecue in this area, and we saw this place. And we thought, you know, that's pretty much out of the middle of nowhere. Let's try that.
Nice. And
so there are people, they're food tours. I mean, that's one of the biggest industries in Georgia now is food tourism.
That's amazing. But also, too, like I was thinking, these spots, they do go, the place itself goes on, like shuts down for 2-3 weeks for vacations, right?
Yeah. Or weddings or funerals or special occasions or – it's just time to go fishing, or I'm taking a vacation to Florida.
It's often best to call them.
That's what I was going to say. If it's really off the beaten path, call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to make sure. Well, thank you guys so much. This was
thank you for doing it again.
We're expecting you. What? When can we expect you? About September?
Oh, or me? Yeah. Probably August, September.
Okay, we'll give you the Grande Tour.
Have a great rest of your week.
All right, Kevin. You too.
All right, take care, guys.